as you give me the green light, Searle.
The light is green.
All right, light is green. Thank you. I'd like to convene this meeting of the University at Albany Council and welcome everybody here today. We have several new members, and it's our privilege and pleasure to welcome Christine Wagner, who is the teacher representative. Christine, I don't know if you want to say anything about yourself or...
I am in the Department of Psychology, but I'm actually a behavioral neuroscientist. My lab is over in the Life Sciences building.
This is a really good opportunity for you to observe some
life sciences.
Exactly.
True clinical experience here.
Our graduate student, Gary Roth.
Hello, everyone. I've been at the university for 9 years, and I'm currently pursuing my PhD, which is my third degree over at College of Healthcare Science Engineering.
Great. Welcome. Kevin Fox?
Yes. Hi, I'm a senior of political science, senior undergrad, that is, and communications. Pleasure to start my term.
Welcome. It's great to have you all. Just as a first order of business, the minutes from the last meeting, if anybody would like to offer any comments to the minutes? If not, can I get a resolution to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. We have approved the minutes. We have our report from the president, and then we need you to stay a moment afterwards. I know George has a couple of a lot of engagements to get to today, so he won't be with us for the whole meeting. This is our last meeting with George, although obviously not George's last time on campus or probably with this body or us individually. So, George.
Thank you. I'll start out by the talking a little bit about the presidential update, the transition update. Sue Phillips is chairing the transition team that is bringing Robert Jones to campus, and by all means, correct me or add whatever you'd like to this report, but he's been on campus a number of times. He's met with a number of stakeholder groups and a number of individuals on campus. Acculturating himself to this university, and I think it's going to be a very smooth and easy transition. I am extremely optimistic about Robert. I think he's going to be a great add to this campus. He's got the right frame of mind. He's the kind of person that understands the value of a quality public higher education, and one of my pet is the need for extreme much more investment in the undergraduate arena, and he really is bought onto that, very much engaged in the community. I think the council made a terrific choice in hiring Robert, and I'm really optimistic for the future. I think the first official day you'll be seeing Robert, you'll probably see or talk to him before that, but it's February 4th when you come in for our advocacy day. It's for those of you who are going to be able to stay for the full day, you can probably make some of the visits to the legislature and the gubernatorial offices that is traditional in that particular day, as well as get the opportunity to meet with our local legislative delegation and, you know, talk about issues that might be of concern to you and our campus. And Vince will basically create a very, very full day for you, and you know, he has a lot of energy, and I suggest that you get a good night's sleep in advance of that session, because he'll work you to the bone. Robert will be back on campus, I believe, around the 20th of December. He's winding things down in Minnesota, which, as you might expect, is after that many years, is a task. I think he's done very well in terms of getting his own residence and issues surrounding his personal affairs in order. He will be living downtown. I won't give you his address and his phone number. I'll let him do that for you. But his official first date is January 2nd. I doubt very much you'll see him here January 2nd, because that's in the middle of our cold zone. And as I told the council at lunch, he may be from Minnesota, but he's really from Georgia. And he doesn't want to come here at below zero weather where we don't have any heat on in the building. But he's certainly looking forward to meeting with all of you in the future, and I think that you'll have a very productive relationship. SUNY 2020, in a nutshell, I thought we did a fabulous job. I think we did in terms of the presentation to the governor. Every indication was that he was very, very favorably inclined and that he was impressed with our presentation. However, we continue to wait for a signature. That's critically important to us because, frankly, we, without the signature from the governor, we are not in a position to assess the tuition increases and the additional revenue for the university that we should have. As you all know, we are a year and a half behind Stony Brook and Buffalo and 6 months behind Binghamton. Although we will get the full value over a period of 5 years, it doesn't matter because there's the whole issue of the monies that we haven't gotten and the compounding that will, you know, be much less in the future. We're exercising everything, all of our lobbying efforts in that direction. We've had great support from the mayor and great support from our local delegation, the chancellor as well, and as well as some very influential, you know, friends of the university. So far, we're still waiting. We have a drop-dead date, frankly, in about a week and a half. So if we don't get it within a week and a half, we actually lose an entire semester. So it's very frustrating, frankly, recognizing, of course, that they have you know, a full plate. But considering what happened with Sandy and considering the focus of our proposal, you would think this would be an opportune time to make an announcement like that, because it certainly would resonate with what he's doing in terms of you know, trying to make a very serious effort at climate change and the research attached to it. So we'll see what happens. SUNY Board of Trustees adopted the 2013-14 budget proposal. It's not the budget, obviously, because it's being submitted for approval. A modest increase in state aid was requested, $53 million. The rational tuition will generate SUNY-wide an additional $106 million. The tuition increase itself will increase $300. For 2013-14, undergraduate tuition will be $5,870. It's still very affordable and very much you know, below the peer groups. I have a couple examples. Pennsylvania, for example, in-state tuition and fees, $12,330. Michigan, $11,172. Massachusetts, $10,619. So we're still highly competitive, and even if you add our fees in, we're at $7,181, which is still a bargain. Capital, there's a 10-year capital budget request that's been submitted. The budget, the capital budget for the next 10 years is $13.36 billion. I will be honest with you, I don't think that we will see a whole lot of that, or we certainly won't see all of that. State continues to be, you know, operate in, you know, with a deficit. Sandy did not help. The circumstances around that did not help. So I'm convinced that it will not be, you know, happy times are here again. There are issues that have to be resolved, but I think SUNY has taken the hit. The university, under the most recent resource allocation model, will lose, based on the new configuration, $1.8 million. It is extremely disappointing, subject to some change, extremely disappointing. Two reasons for that. One is the incentive payment for research is going to be based purely on federal indirects. In my opinion, a very short-sighted approach, considering we're talking about, you know, focusing our efforts at economic development and at workforce training, which will get virtually no credit in this formula. The federal indirect approach will help Stony Brook and Buffalo and will basically hurt everybody else, in particular us, because we do have a significant public service component to the work we do. That's disappointing. And the other thing is there's an enrollment-based component on it. Right or wrong, this university, I chose to not artificially grow our enrollment for purposes of revenue because I wanted to maintain the quality of the student population, as well as pretty much be a team player and recognize that you could, in an environment of reduced resources, $47 million, we couldn't grow our enrollment because we couldn't provide for the students that we currently had. That is actually serving against us because they're basing their enrollment calculation on what we have as a reduced enrollment. We went from 18,200 to a lower number, and that's our baseline. I don't agree with that. I've voiced my opinion rather strongly. I don't agree with the research match either. But at the end of the day, that's where it is now, subject to some change, but it's not good news as far as that's concerned. I did not go to the SystemNIST conference. If anybody would like to, you were there, I assume.
I was there.
If you want to share some SystemNIST with us, I'd be happy to listen. It's the right way to go. I don't know whether or not how effective it is, but it's the right way to go. Our Center for Technology and Government hosted the 2012 ICE-Gov conference. It's the first time this conference has been held in the United States. It's a very prestigious event. Participants from 62 countries attended, and it is a terrific honor for this university to have been the inaugural host in the United States. And our CTG director, Teresa Pardo, is doing a fabulous job, and she has been attracting a lot of worldwide attention to our program. I'm not going to go through that. Our R&A Institute had a number of successes over the past 2 months. They presented a first-round REDC project to Governor Cuomo on October 23rd, which was part of the Governor's Capital Region Tour. We kicked off construction on the new home of the R&A Institute on October 11th. It's going to be a $9.4 million research facility, largely funded by federal dollars, 15,000 square feet in our life science building. And we're adding six new world-class R&A researchers to our Institute Scientific Advisory Board, and we're talking about world-class. We're talking about Nobel Prize winners, National Academy members. So it continues to grow in prestige. It continues to garner great accolades for the university, and it will be one of our great centers of excellence in the future, largely due to the tenacious advocacy of our Dean of Arts and Sciences, Elga Wolford, who did a terrific job in shepherding this program over the last few years. So if you see her, congratulate her. 2012 Citizen Laureate Dinner, some of you were there, a couple of you were there, was an enormous, enormous success. Fardeen and his people did a fabulous job converting the CEFQ Arena into what was a world-class venue. We had so many people that were signed up and ultimately attended that we had to abandon the facility in Saratoga, Hall of Springs, another senior moment, that the only place we could accommodate the more than 600 people who attended was our gymnasium. It was a wonderful evening, a beautiful venue, and we raised about
$250,000.
Over $250,000 for scholarship money for our students, which again is a terrific event, and it's it was a great event, largely because the honorees were so well regarded. Norm and Mickey Masary, for those of you in the community, know that the Masary family is probably the premier family in terms of largesse and contributing to all kinds of activities, and they were so highly regarded that there were many people there. And of course, our own Dean Catherine Lawson, Briar Lawson, who was the dean of our School of Social Welfare, was the academic honoree, and she too was a greatly deserved the recognition, and it was a great evening. Our fall festival and our homecoming weekend was another terrific event. We had great crowds, terrific attendance. We had alumni awareness luncheon where we celebrated three of our alums. One young man, Ashton Holmes, class of 2002, the star of ABC's TV's hit series Revenge. I'd never heard of it before, so I have no idea what it was. I tried to act knowledgeable, and I had no. I could have been a cowboy. I don't know what it was. Yeah. But Dr. Carolyn Grosvenor, who is the class of 2006, who is a leading advocate in health literacy around the world. She was very, very impressive. Randy Cohen, class of 1971. Those of you who know, who read the New York Times, know that he has been, he started and wrote The Ethicist for many years. And he started out as a writer for David Letterman for many years. And he was very entertaining. That same weekend, we had Nobel Prize-winning author J.M. Coetzee, who is a giant of world literature, a person who rarely makes public appearances. He's from South Africa, and he was a great draw. And again, Fardeen, to credit Fardeen and his people. Community Day was a great success. We welcomed the seventh speaker in the World Within Reach speaker series, which is amazing. I tried to figure out seven speakers, and it started when I was here, and I haven't been here 7 years, but we had duplicates. We had a couple in there. But it was Russell Simmons, who is a legendary hip-hop entrepreneur, a great philanthropist, did a terrific job, did an absolute job. It isn't Motown. But he's not Berry Gordy, but yeah. He's darn close. Yeah, but and listen, I want to really thank the Student Association for not just this most recent one, but for the entire speaker series that you guys have sponsored. It is a great credit to the institution. It's terrific credit to you guys. It's brought prominence and it's brought great community participation, and I thank you very much for your investment in your university, and you know we've all benefited as a result, so thank you very much for that. RODK chapter, which is the national leadership organization with over 300,000 members, we initiated a record class of 51. Most impressively is that our own Michael Christakis, who works for Chris in the Office of Student Success, is now the national president of ODK. One of our honorary degree, our honorary recipient was Jerry Jennings, who did a very nice job at the award ceremony. Even though he was not well and didn't intend to come, he managed to come and he did did a very nice job. Importantly, we beat Siena. Both the men's and the women's team. And our men's team in the mid-major poll that came out 2 weeks ago, and we've won since then, it was ranked 25th in the nation. So that's a real kudos, according to the Times Union. You're boring, boring but effective. So that's the best we can get out of it. So
wins a win.
The way it works.
That's right. You just take the W's.
That's my report. I'd like to take a minute, though, and tell you how much I have enjoyed my opportunity to work with the university and to work with you guys over the last several years. And when you go back to, you know, my council role, it goes back, you know, quite a while. I've enjoyed the council. I've enjoyed the university. I've enjoyed working with all of you. I cannot tell you what an impact you've had on my life, and I can't tell you how much this university has meant to me for all of the years that I've been involved. I think we're poised for continued growth, and I think you guys are the right people in the right place to help Robert into the future. I know that there's discussion, and there are people here who really are concerned about the role of the council on a going forward basis. And I too, believe it or not, many years ago was involved with that, sort of trying to formulate the role of the council. My advice on that is there are statutory approaches. ACT is an opportunity to go, but get to know Robert first. Get an idea, develop a relationship with him, figure out how best you can work with him and to how best you can serve the needs of the university at the end of the day. Get used to him, get acquainted with him, do what you have to do, and then establish yourself as a constructive element in terms of bringing the university forward. You have a statutory role. Clearly, that's not all you can do, and that's not all you should do. But at the end of the day, get to know him first and sort of, get on board with the agenda or work with him to develop the agenda, more importantly. So I thank you. I love you all. You guys have been great. And I look forward to seeing you in a different role in the future. So thank you very much.
Can't go yet. No. I think Pierre would like to offer a resolution from... Do we have it, Sorrel? Maybe we don't.
It's at the restaurant. I thought you were going to take it. No, I'm only kidding. I've left it in George's office.
Well, put it this way. It's rather lengthy. We recited it before. And, if Pierre, you want to either do the whole thing or hit the highlights, speaking of Berry Gordy.
We have a little bit of a show here. So to begin with, the student will read part of it.
Okay. I guess I'll begin. And it's long, so we do need to share the responsibility. We're going to get through it. Whereas George M. Philip received his BA degree in 1969 and his MA degree in 1973 from the University at Albany. And whereas he received his JD from Western New England College School of Law in 1978. And whereas in 1969 through 71, he was a high school history teacher in Schenectady. And whereas in 1971, he began a long and successful career with the New York State Teachers Retirement System, being appointed executive director in 1995, transforming the institution into one of the top retirement systems in the nation. And whereas during these years, he served on the board and often as the chair of numerous nonprofit organizations in the Capital Region and beyond on boards and committees of national corporations and professional organizations.
Whereas in 1997,
Seamless.
He was appointed by the governor to the University Council and also chaired that body. Whereas he served on the board of directors of the Research Foundation of SUNY. Whereas in 2007, he was appointed interim president of the university, and on June 16, 2009, as the 18th president of the university. Whereas, as president, he provided stability, determined leadership, selfless devotion to the university and its mission during a historic recession that began in 2008 and the years immediately thereafter. And whereas he led efforts to advance nearly $400 million in capital construction across the campus, one of the most significant periods of investment in the university history, and whereas he demonstrated an unwavering commitment and passion for the well-being for the university and its students, faculty, and staff each and every day. Now, therefore, be it...
So much for seniors.
It was supposed to be bigger print.
Be it resolved.
All right, back to the student.
Okay. Younger eyes.
Be it resolved that the University Council recognizes extraordinary leadership of the institution during a period of severe state and national economic instability. And further, that the University Council extends its gratitude to him for his service to the university, his tireless promotion of the university with the community, with the SUNY system, with the state legislature and governor, and his encouragement of service to the community by students, and further resolve that the University Council expresses good wishes to him and to his supportive wife, Sandra, also a university graduate, for a healthy, happy, and well-earned retirement. And it is approved unanimously on the 7th day of December 2012.
Thank you. Can I get a motion to approve? Seconded?
Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
I couldn't get the confetti in time to come down.
Suitably framed, I think, but...
Nice job.
Was it unanimous? No one abstained?
No.
No abstention.
All right, George. Thank you very much. Okay. It's hard to keep going after that, I must say. Leaves quite a void. I'm sitting in this chair for so many years with the privilege of George in multiple roles, the council, council president, interim president, president, and, you know, obviously it's a great period that sits before us with Robert Jones to be the next president, but it's really hard to think of this place without him. But knowing what George has done, you know, his impact is going to stay here forever, and obviously he's not gone in person or spirit, but it's just amazing to think about the impact George has had on this place. So take a deep breath.
Carry on.
All right.
And we're going to... Kevin, you got to pick up the reins from here.
Good luck.
So long.
Mr. Fox, you're up.
Who's that?
So the president took about half my presentation.
A good president will do that.
You're being charitable.
Yes, the good part. Always the good part.
I took the good part. That's for sure. As you mentioned, you know, the biggest event we've students been up to recently has been the speaker series with Russell Simmons. It was a great success. In addition, most recently we had the Fall Fest concert as kids came back from Thanksgiving break right into, and that was the big fall celebration for the students that year. Look forward to also the spring celebration that'll be happening next semester. The other things we've been up to, there was the SUNY Student Association meeting that took place in Liverpool at the end of October. We sent UAlbany delegation of students there, including the grad student delegation. To represent us. The spring meeting will be held sometime in April in Albany at a location to be determined, so we'll be happy to host that. The other thing that we got up to, Election Day, was obviously a very successful, 2012 was a very successful Election Day for the campus. We had over 1,977 students vote on campus. Approximately about 700 of those were paper ballots, but 1,200 were right in the machines. And for reference, that's higher than 2008 of just people who were voting in the machines. It was a bit of
You have machines on campus?
Here? Machines on campus, yeah.
That's great.
It was kind of a bit of a perfect storm, I think, of turnout for students, being the presidential year, and the governor's executive order allowing students to vote, or anybody to vote who was displaced by Long Island vote. We had several students turn up and vote that way. So yeah, it was definitely, I think, the busiest election day the on-campus polling sites I've ever seen. I'm sure folks might have seen some of the coverage in the Times Union. The other thing, the biggest community service thing that we've done recently was a Schoharie cleanup. We had about 80 students get on buses and head over to Schoharie to help with hurricane cleanup. That's pretty much all we've been up to.
Sounds good,
enough.
Kevin.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Wonderful. Gary?
I think I'm after faculty.
Well, I called you out.
The trick maneuver.
That's okay. It's a lucky thing. I had it written.
We're going clockwise.
Okay. To esteemed members of the University Council, I make the following report. Introduction. GSO has taken to repairing the state of its finances with much success. At this time, the GSO is solvent, having repaid all of its debts and having more excess money than expenses remaining for the semester. I think that will meet with some of your approval. Additionally, the level of austerity that has refocused the attention of graduate students on the GSO and the activities, and has anticipated that this will lead to a higher level of scrutiny. This will be further enabled by rules changes proposed by the Vice President, the Assembly Speaker, and I, which were moved to implementation by GSO Assembly, and a committee has been formed to re-examine essential rules and documents of GSO and perform changes which reconcile them and allow for an effective oversight. Chairing that committee. The GSO has also following the council's suggestion, formed a student debt preliminary planning committee. I think that Dr. Jackson will appreciate that. This committee is tasked with recommending action to the GSO and other agencies to help abet the accumulation of student personal debt, and this committee will start meeting in the spring. GSO has also engaged in community outreach, particularly enthused with the student-to-student initiative. We've had excellent success thus far, and the Vice President intends to continue this into the spring. And finally, in the wake of Storm Sandy and the tremendous destruction and hardship, the Vice President started a program called Project Sandy to solicit donations of food, clothing, blankets, and other essentials to those who have been most severely affected. This program has been very successful, and a large number of goods have already been sent to affected regions. Thank you.
Any questions for Gary?
I'll take it.
I was just going to mention, and I don't know if
if we talked about this before, but over in the School of Business, they have obviously extensive accounting faculty, and actually it's a pretty big degree program here. You may want to wander over there and either pick their brains or have one of them even come in, you know, volunteer. They have graduate students in accounting even, that maybe there's a way to...
That was one of the ideas that was posited. As I said, the committee hasn't met officially, but some ideas were discussed in the assembly meetings of the GSO. That was one of the ideas that have been posited. One of the concerns was that those individuals may not necessarily be obligated to maintain confidentiality. So thus, while they may be useful in providing information, unless there's some sort of confidentiality agreement, as I brought up at the last meeting, there might be some issue that some students might be too embarrassed to bring things up for that reason. And as we all know, that people do get awfully concerned about the perceptions of them with respect to money. That being said, we do look forward to hopefully being able to engage in some positive action. They did express some... When this was brought up, they did express some deal of concern and interest in whether or not the university does or does not have the resources to attempt to facilitate an actual program to work on getting information out and otherwise addressing this and providing advice. But I suspect we'll get to that under new business.
Because one thing you can do is, if people internally are uncomfortable, they obviously have hundreds of alums that are sitting in all different accounting firms, including, I'm sure, here just in the Capital District. Maybe one of them would volunteer to...
You could reach out maybe through the Alumni Association.
Well, no, just ask the School of Business, could you give us a KPMG alum or Deloitte alum or somebody here locally who might be interested in working with us on a volunteer basis, and I'm sure you'd get someone.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Carol. Christine?
Well, this is a very busy time of year for faculty as we head into finals week next week. But it's also very busy for a very positive reason, and that's there's a lot of faculty searches going on right now. I've been here 11 or 12 years, and it's the most numerous search process I've ever seen. I know in our department we have 4 searches for faculty going on currently. There's at least 3 going on in biology. They're all over. And that's terrific, so that's very positive news. In terms of the Faculty Senate, I think the biggest piece of legislation to go through the Senate this semester so far, the Undergraduate Economic Council presented a proposal for the first-year writing program, in which freshmen and incoming transfers will be part of a mandatory writing program. This was passed by the Senate, and I believe is one of the president. So that was the biggest piece of legislation.
So it's requiring a freshman? Has that always been the case, or it's a new program? Or?
It's under the new, so a new gen ed policy is in place, and this is under part of the new gen ed policy, where it's changing from the writing intensive courses and the Z courses that exist now to a mandatory writing program.
Good.
Are the searches because of retention, turnover, retirements, increased faculty?
A lot of 2020, but I think also probably replacements after the recession.
Good. That's good news.
Yeah.
Like hearing that.
So that's better than replacements, yeah.
Is that it? Any other questions for Christine? Okay. Our wonderful alumni.
Here we are.
Chair.
Got all my paperwork. We're ready.
Okay.
No gifts.
Here we are. No gifts. Excuse me. I want you to know that there is one man in this room that has a sense of duty, and that would be our. Look at the tie, please.
I'll take the accommodation and the angry glares.
Notice I didn't have my collar on. I can say whatever I wish without my collar. Anyway, these are my talking points. Kay's talking about me. Forget it. We are implementing, and we're in the second year of our 3-year strategic plan, and we are in the process of implementing various aspects of it. And one of the ones is marketing to students, alumni, the community. So watch for us on the buses, the SUNY buses. We're on 10 SUNY buses that will, of course, go around the campus and go into the community. And these are, I'm giving a sample of the generic version of the ad. And from there, what we do is we have a little schedule, and it's put on other buses depending on where they run and so forth and so on. So far, we've been getting some nice feedback. We have 2,000 members now in the past 2 months added to the Facebook for this outreach thing. I've been talking to you about the Career Advisory Network, and we had hoped for, as I mentioned, 1,200 members, and we actually now have 1,600 alumni volunteers working on that. And we're at the stage now where we are promoting it to alumni and to students. Near and dear to my heart is what we call the Alumni Engagement Rating Scale. You know, being a math major, and to feed my obsessive compulsive habits, I have to measure everything. So normally you would wait till the third year to measure your goals and so forth. But we're doing it right now. We're doing it on 8 variables. I'll just quickly read those. It's volunteer participation, annual giving, active communication, attendance at events, academic achievement, recipients of awards, using UAA, Alumni Association, or university resources, and legacy. So just in a nutshell, here's what happens. Let's take Pierre's fraternity and the same one that George is in. I think it's called TXO. That's an inside joke. That's a joke. APA.
Potter Club.
So anyway, so what happens is this. They had an alumni weekend. We do this for every single event. They had a reunion. APA had a reunion. And what will happen is at the end of that, the staff person who is responsible for that event will then input the participants, what kind of follow-up communication she had with each of those participants, whether they ever gave another gift after they've been here, and on and on and on through those 8 variables. So we get a profile on each individual. Then we take the event itself, and again, measuring against these, how many participated, how much volunteers were involved, what the resources cost. We then come up with a combined image of, should we go forward with this again? Did it cost us thousands of dollars? We had 10 people there, and so forth and so on. So we have now can make informed decisions upon every single event. Likewise, deployment of staff. We have too many staff on this event. We should have had them over here, that kind of thing. So I'm kind of excited to see how that. I'm driving about crazy over there. They can't wait for my term to end on April 20th, but I'm loving it. Now, very quickly also, I wanted you to see a copy of the resolution that we passed for George. George came to us at the last meeting, what we thought was the last meeting, April 12th, 2012. And he spent the 2 subsequent ones. But in the meantime, we did 3 things. We passed this resolution, making him emeritus. We've only done that 3 times in the history of the Alumni Association. So he did that. We also gave a substantial donation to his scholarship. And then thirdly, we gave him a bunch of sort of gag type gifts. So till the statute of limitations is off, I can't tell you anything about what we did. But anyway, we had a wonderful time with him that day. It was very heartwarming, and I can't really read that because I won't make it through it. But anyway, that's the resolution. He served essentially 10 years on our board, 5 as an actual board member, 5 as interim president. So that ends my report. Questions? Discussion? Hearing none?
Yeah. Just on the donations back to the, do you coordinate the foundation with the alumni, or how does...
Oh, yeah. Oh, I couldn't do it.
So, same. So if you give to one, you give to the other.
Couldn't do it without him. Oh, yeah, no, that's...
That makes sense.
We wouldn't be able to do any of this.
And part of the assessment of the events is the development potential of the event. You know, sometimes mm-hmm. we sit down, well, right. You only had 14 people and Alumni Association, right. You were wonderful enough to have 5 individuals, but it may not seem cost effective, but look what it did for us for the 7 people that were there. So that also goes to part of the metrics.
I want to explore TXO, but maybe at the next meeting.
Yeah. I've been sitting here trying to figure out what it stands for.
After that crossword puzzle I did, I'm done now.
Theta, whatever. What was it? Theta, Chi, Omega.
Oh, I thought it started with
I like Potter's Club. Okay.
Was there?
That's right. We won't go in.
Well, there's one piece of old business I wanted to touch on. I know last time we collectively authored a draft resolution to seek a review of the presidential search process, a lot of concern surrounding the leak and sort of the structure of that, and sort of some of the harm and concern around the harm, not just, you know, potential for that search. Fortunately, we got Dr. Jones, but just, you know, going forward, the notion that, you know, there could be a leak like that, and what are there consequences, what's the recourse. In speaking with Bill Howard, who's the Vice Chancellor and General Counsel of SUNY, Bill and the Chancellor are very concerned about that, not just for University of Albany, but obviously for SUNY-wide. And, you know, what they are doing is putting together and probably will assign someone to lead a process to review not just what happened here, but, you know, best practices. And that hasn't been formalized yet, but I wanted you to know that, you know, that message has been heard, that concern is shared, and, you know, SUNY will be devoting resources to look into that. So I don't know if anybody had any questions with respect to that, but that's where that stands.
Dan, is there any interest in pursuing the investigation?
You know, I don't know that it will be an investigation. I mean, I think, first of all, I think there was a serious concern evinced by this group and, you know, more as importantly, the search committee and other members on the campus community. And we articulated that very strongly. I think what the chancellor is looking to do is what's the best way to do an assessment of what happened, put the proper protocols in place, but also make sure that what's done doesn't in any way jeopardize Dr. Jones as he, you know, starts his presidency here going forward. So it's not clear to me yet, you know, how that's going to manifest itself. Obviously, this body relies on the resources and support of SUNY to do that. I think we can clearly articulate, not just for ourselves, but also for the members of the search committee, you know, the depth of our concern. So we've had that conversation and have not yet heard back formally what they intend to do. So I would say yes, very much so, was heard, and I would expect something to be done. New business, and I think it's a topic that you know, Dr. Jackson has focused on with us as a group before, and I know it's not going to be raised and done today. It's a continuum, but Jim, if you want to...
Yeah, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I just want to make sure that we reinforce the fact that when students are when the orientation program takes place, not only for the student but also for the parents, I'm seeing increasingly around the country where parents are signing these loans, and they don't realize that once they sign, that they are responsible for those loans. And it is really having a terrific impact, a devastating impact, I should say, on families. So I think a thorough orientation program, and the same thing as preparation. Many eons ago, we used to have certain mandated things, you know, freshman English, for example. But I think in some cases now we've got to look at financial question, because it's going to impact the quality of life. I see it across the board. I see, for example, not just at this level, but at every level, and especially in the medical school, is that not only are they coming out with over $200,000 of debt, medical debt, but there's debt prior to that and college debt. And then when they go into residency, they're going to make a small amount of money, which means they get in more debt. And if they go to fellowship, depending on how many years, you get into more debt. So this, to me, seems to be a life-altering process. And as you're preparing for a career, you're preparing for the future, this kind of preparation needs to take place. So I think in time, at some point, we're going to have to figure out how we can best advise and start at an early level. As a matter of fact, on Monday in the Regents, I will be talking about those students in elementary and junior high school that teaching them some basic financial management skills. They don't have to know about credit default swaps or collateralized debt obligations or derivatives. That's not the thing. But you
should
look
about
at
bankruptcy, though.
But, and those go together.
And what can be discharged in bankruptcy? What loans can?
Well, yeah. The other issue is that teens have X number of dollars, and of course, when you see a company like Bank of America gets involved, I'm saying, how do they spend this money? What its percentage goes, what, when, and where? So I'm going to look at a consumer. There's a consumer required consumer program at the junior high school level, and some of it moves into the high school, that they need to walk through this. What I'm seeing at a lot of colleges, when I was in Chicago, I'm looking in California, and what they're doing is they're spending the money. I wish the money could go directly to tuition or directly to books rather than come through the hands of the students, but unfortunately it isn't. So what they're doing is that they're paying their cell phone bills, they're paying, they're buying this Starbucks coffee, and they don't annualize anything. If you pay now for the new Starbucks coffee that's coming out, I'm sure everybody's going to want to try it, it's $7. And you do that by 1 week, you do it by 4 weeks, you do it by 52 weeks or 40 weeks or whatever. It ends up being a lot of money. They don't see it. Or they're taking the money, loaning money to others. So this is something I think we really need to look at very carefully, because a thorough college preparation, and the other thing too is to look at how much you're going to borrow. If you're going to take a first job at $50,000, maybe you shouldn't borrow more than that amount of money. Of course, obviously it takes over time to pay it, but they're not doing it. They're continuously borrowing. And the length of time they stay in school. Instead, if you're supposed to get out in 3 or 4 years, you stay 7 or 8, whatever, and so forth. That's increasingly more debt, but not having a major that's going to really address that. So you might want to have to sort of look at what they enjoy doing, yes, but also what is financially sound. And sometimes you might not get to do the thing you always wanted to do because it's just not, especially if you're going to have to pay for it. So I recall when our son was at the Christian Northwestern University of Chicago Medical School, there were 10 of them who were very good friends. They all were enthusiastic about being physicians. They were going to save, they were going to just cure the world. But of the 10, and fortunately he was one of the 4 out of the 10 that had no debt, they continued their attitude toward medicine and so forth. But those who got into debt, they quickly flip, and it became focused on, you know, I've got to make this money to get this thing off my back. I discovered among a couple of them that they had gotten these credit cards because people anticipated they're going to make all this money. So you got these credit cards. And these are, University of Chicago only takes 100 out of maybe 10 or 12,000 applicants. So you figure they should be able to do anything. And they should know certain basic things. So a couple of these guys bought a car on a credit card.
Oh, no.
Now, these are some of the brightest guys in our country, and this is what they do.
They haven't become surgeons, though, or anything.
Well,
I'm not going
there. One of them, as a matter of fact, is a neurosurgeon. And, but that's true. But again, it's
tuition
simplistic,
refund.
But it has become a very, very, it's become crucial. So I won't go further, but I just would like you to consider. And there are interesting websites like yobuckle.com. They do a neat one on how to start a college financial management program, and they have the program clearly laid out, or how to get money for college, and the smart a guide to financial aid from a website called FinAid. So the information is there, but we've got to get it from there in the hands of our students, not just that first year. It has to be something done the second year, etc. And the last thing I would say is that I recall doing the same thing for many of my staff, is that I used to, when you first hire them, talk about retirement, which people don't like to talk about, but planning for retirement, right from the very beginning, and understanding. And I found crucial that a lot of people, for example, in companies that have 401ks, they will match. And saying, you know, just go to the match, just contribute to the match. That's free money. How to handle that? And my son now has talked to his staff about the thrift management program, because there's by contributing those programs, you get X numbers of free, maybe sometimes $300 or $400 a month free. But you can't do this unless you have some knowledge. So I'll end here by saying we want to continue with this. We can give them a great education, but this too becomes me a part of a great education if you're going to have a quality life and make it beneficial. Okay, thank you.
So I have a question, like just as part of student orientation or, you know, that process as far as financial understanding, you know, even at a remedial level, you know.
For financial counseling, even?
You might want to ask.
I was going to ask Chris.
Because Chris is here, yeah.
She was giving us an orientation. But what you might want to do is invite a presentation from our financial aid office, which does a fair amount of pre-college prevention. They do a number of programs in the community to make sure that students know what they're thinking about in making college plans, especially the financial plans. Then, of course, when financial aid packages are put together, there's an extensive program that goes with that. We've also just signed on with SUNY to be one of their showcases on debt prevention, debt default prevention. So you'll be seeing that as well. It might be very helpful, actually.
I think maybe it's an agenda item for a next meeting. We can cover this up.
And I think it would be terrible. You see, a lot of people don't know the difference between a public loans as opposed to private loans.
Sure.
And those little, now you can give them packets and give them things, but they won't read them. Sometimes that's fine. That's being safe. So it's just one of those kinds of things that you're doing a lot of things you think that people should. And they are, but if you don't read it, it doesn't work.
Do we teach a financial literacy course? Is there one in the curriculum? In other words, that students could take as either a four credit course or maybe even not for credit?
It's not that I'm aware of.
I'm going to be honest. Like, I think that we've hit on a key point, which is you can hand individuals documents and they don't necessarily read them. The ability to find this information and the ability to balance a checkbook and these sort of things have become exponentially easier in the information age, and yet people don't look for them, don't know how to do them because it's not incentivized in a direct way. They say, okay, there's some consequence down the line, but you know, in the long run, everyone's dead. That approach, and then as a result, they don't really put in their near-term perspective. And I think that one of the most practical, quick way you could incentivize it without feeling like it's really forced would be to maybe implement some sort of a 3 or 4 credit gen ed applicable financial literacy course and have it recommended by to every student who comes in for their first semester, and that would at least get it to them and heavily encourage it, because I know most students who come in their first semester typically don't have to override their advisements, so they'll end up taking it.
There are certainly colleges around that offer that course, whether it's required or not. I would say it rarely is required.
Well, that's why, a tougher one. And obviously orientation, there's a lot that happens at orientation, but it would be interesting, and I'd like to learn a little bit more about how students get exposed to financial literacy. You know, what's the opportunity for everybody universally to almost be immersed in that? Because you're right, if it's an elective, it probably doesn't happen. If somebody says, hey, you can go to this link and learn anything, that doesn't happen. And if you just get a stack of papers, we know that doesn't happen. So maybe we could explore that at the next meeting and think about, you know, how to add that to the agenda.
I do want to know, I was an orientation assistant my sophomore year, and there is a half-hour presentation from the SARS office that all students sit through that covers an extent about loans, not necessarily about financial planning, though.
Yeah, I would broaden that beyond loans to financial literacy, because I think it is part of a broader discussion, and it is something. I mean, I can certainly speak from my own experience that it was the furthest thing from my mind.
Yeah, well, for a lot of people, it's a second, if not a third language. So, and it's tough. So,
the other thing I would just say real quickly about orientation too, I think Kevin made a good point. It, you know, financial aid does talk to parents and students, but they're very quick sessions. They're not in depth, and typically by that time, parents have already made decisions on how they're financing an education. It's almost too late
good
by the time orientation comes.
To go out with the acceptance letter,
there's got to be some other mechanism to get this word out while these kids are seniors in high school to really have parents understand when they start thinking about how they're going to finance an education, rather than once the bill is already paid.
Jim touched upon both at the junior high school and high school level. But I don't know if we have time to cover this in much more length today, but I do think it merits further discussion, and I think it's a great topic, and maybe we can, Jim, work on how to advance that for the next meeting and get a better understanding here at the university of what those opportunities are for literacy, you know, what kids do. And obviously, to Chris's point, you know, by the time you get here, you know, you've probably made some critical decisions around what's going to position you financially going forward. And to put you in a position to write big checks to Fardeen, who's up next.
Good afternoon. Since our last meeting, I figured I'd go over a few of the gifts that we closed. Our last time was in October. We received a $500,000 from the state of Mrs. Alice Hastings Murphy, former director of university libraries.
Wow.
This brings her total to $1 million, and all her support has been going to the university libraries. $250,000 pledge bequest for Bob Fortfield for Dan Nolan. This is his second gift, six-figure gift to the stadium. A $250,000 bequest intention from Layla Moore, class of 75, which will ultimately support the School of Education. A $146,000 gift in kind of real estate. This is a property at South Lake Avenue. Dr. Bob Wishnoff, he donated it to us. And this was formerly his office building. And if you recall, and this was the almost in front of this house that our student was killed.
Mm. Oh,
so
wow.
we are looking in ways that we might be able to use this property and facility. And we received $60,000 from Gregory McGuire for an endowment to maintain his archive collection. If you might have seen some news clippings that Gregory McGuire gave his papers to us, so this will help us to maintain the papers here. And our own wonderful supporter, Ms. Patricia Caldwell, for School of Business, $50,000.
All right.
And thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And $50,000 from Ellsworth Carey Foundation in support of University Arts. And a $50,000 gift from Scott McGovern Memorial Scholarship. As you recall, this was our alumni that was killed in 9/11. The value of the scholarship is over $750,000 now.
Wow.
And we received the $40,000 from John Orser, class of 55, for an endowment to support the theater production. There are a number of other gifts. I'm not going to go into that. George talked about the Citizen Laureate. It was a great success, and thank you for all of you who supported it. The Alumni Association added 1,500 members to their Facebook page. Did you talk about the Facebook?
Yes.
You did?
2,000, please. In the past
2,000.
please.
But what they're doing is we found a donor that will go to everyone that says that liked the book, that they like the Facebook. So our goal is to have 5,270. So when it gets to that level, we could have a scholarship there. And also, we launched our faculty staff appeal in November. And in addition to supporting the faculty staff program here to the tune of $2.2 million last year, we also awarded over $1 million in a scholarship. And I have to say, so far this year, the numbers are looking very good. And I think we will be able to award more than $1.1 million or $1.2 million in a scholarship. And we had a wonderful, I thought, on all account, the homecoming was fantastic. Everything was very well done from all of our levels, and we were very happy, a lot of good feelings. And as you all noticed, usually when I start my dollar figures, the largest dollar figure somehow says bequest, realized trust, and guess who has been over many, many years responsible for that?
Right.
Sorrel Chesson. Sorrel is retiring in January. I just want to officially thank him. I don't want to recognize him, but I want in front of the council to go in the minutes that I want to thank you on behalf of the University at Albany Foundation. As I sit in our staff meetings, the result and the fruits of your labor are going to be realized for many years to come by benefiting the students for scholarships and everything else. And I can't thank you enough.
Chesson?
Chesson, yes. Also, give an update on George's scholarship. We have over $220,000 in cash. And we were able to award 4 scholarships from that. And University at Albany Foundation Board of Directors told me you have to raise at least $500,000 in cash. So this is an ongoing process. Thank you for all of you who have, you know, generously supported it. And this is an ongoing, you know, project, as I said. And a little report back on Robert Jones. We had him on the road. And November 1st, Jeff Black hosted an event at his house, and he was smash hit. I think it was all like, oh, Pat, you were there.
It was great.
He was very comfortable being on the road. And the following day, George Hurst had a small luncheon hosted I think it's a pre-apology for all the bad articles about Robert Jones to come.
Yes.
The Times Union at the Hearst Tower, and I thought that, and he was very, very nice. And he came, he was here for the Citizen Laureate, and he was also a couple of the local events that we had, we were together. So he's hitting the ground running, so we are very pleased. This is my report. Thank
great.
You.
Thank you.
Oh, and
you
I
have another item, right?
Yep.
I
have in front of you, I would like, this is a resolution for naming the opportunity level for luxury suites. We did our investigation, and this is the proper amount to name our suites for the new athletic facilities. This is the minimum, the $100,000. We can, you know, we are asking for larger amount of gifts. I would like acceptance. Lee, do you want to say anything?
Well,
because this is your project.
Well, no, it's our project,
our project.
University project. I just like to say that we are now canvassing potential people who will support the suite project and the naming rights project that Fardeen's people are putting together, and it's going extremely well. And of course, your endorsement of this will have us to continue to receive positive feedback from the corporate community. So we're very excited about it. We think this is the appropriate level.
How many suites are there?
There are 5 suites. Dan, you take one off because, as you well know, the naming rights person will get one, and then the other 4 will be available to other corporate or individual entities.
How's the construction going?
We're scheduled to be completed, Robert, in July, and we will take occupancy in early August. And I wish I had a final schedule. You know, we're going to the CAA,
right,
so
right.
We're putting that together as we speak. But we hope to have our home game, first home game in September. And Fardeen and I are working out the date for homecoming now.
Great.
So it's right on schedule.
Awesome.
Great.
So could you have a name for each of the suites, and
yes,
then also then rent the suite out if the name didn't want the suite?
You know, Pat, that's an interesting point.
Fardeen
and
you're not buying the suite. You're naming the suite.
Well, you're naming the suite, but the other piece that Fardeen was kind enough to get $1 million donor for Bob Ford Field,
mm-hmm,
so you could have Citibank Stadium at Bob Ford Field,
right,
with the suite for Pat Caldwell.
Right,
yeah.
Or the Arthur Anderson suite,
yes,
and then
right.
Pat Caldwell would reserve the suite for her party.
Yeah, that's a different question. So if you have the Pat Caldwell suite, does that mean Pat gets that for every event?
In that particular year.
In that particular year.
So it's 100, it's a licensing for the year, and it's a rental.
It's,
over multiple years.
The way this is, you're working, trying to work this out is, you pay $100,000, you get to use the suite for 5 years. After 5 years, it goes to whomever wants to pay $20,000 here to keep it. But the first right of refusal goes to Pat, because her name.
So is it a naming opportunity?
So it isn't really naming the suite.
But it will always be Pat Caldwell.
Oh, okay. So it is a naming opportunity plus use.
You just get to rent it back.
I'm sorry.
For 5 years, you get to keep it. But forever, you could somebody and say, would you like, if you get the suite, you get the Pat Caldwell suite. So when do I send the bill back?
Tell John Siegel that.
All right, so can we get a motion in favor?
So moved. Motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thanks, John.
I have one question.
Go ahead.
Going back to the George and Sandra Phillip.
Thank
scholarship.
You.
Is that a special? I know that at the end of the year that people contribute, etc. I think it would be a tremendous opportunity for the council to have 100% participation in the scholarship. And how would that work? Would that just be designated as
just on the minimum of the check, or put down to approve George and Sandra Phillip scholarship?
Yeah. Because we haven't actually been solicited for that I don't think. Have we, Fardeen?
We got emails.
We got emails. Yes. And also, I believe at the last council meeting, I have.
Can you hit it again? I wasn't there.
You don't have to ask me twice.
I don't want to ask you once.
That would be helpful.
In fact, if you have your MasterCard number, Fardeen, we can work it out for you right now.
Easier to see.
It's no better way to join the 1844 Society.
One grin.
Jake, you had a question from...
Not a question. I just wanted to comment that we're very fortunate that our provost happens to be the goddaughter of Miss Hastings. Well, I know it's Miss Hastings, the librarian. I think it's wonderful that she has contributed. She has, because she was immensely dedicated to this place. Absolutely so.
That's a wonderful
Dan, did you take a vote? I know Clancy Stein moved and seconded.
We approved it. Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
I know you're still giddy with the chess in reference. But
he's writing about himself.
A little bit of clarification, though. You're only retiring from the foundation, correct? I don't know what you're. What are you doing, sir?
Not from his role. Because
actually, I'm retiring from my state employment position, which is under Fardeen.
Okay.
And so the question up in the air would be, will I be continuing? Because this is a presidential appointment, has nothing to do with what my normal occupation might be under Fardeen or under any other office.
Just a little clarity here.
Right,
thank
right.
You.
And so what's pending is action by Jones to say, I have someone I will be bringing in or appointing, but I'm just continuing in the role, so there's no gap for this.
Great, thank you.
So I'll be here on February 4, unless he brings somebody from Minnesota with him.
Thank you, Sorrel.
Okay.
Pierre, ECT?
Just briefly on the Association of College Council Members and College Trustees. We had our conference in early October. Abner and Michael joined the conference in Lake Placid. I think the presentations and the presenters were very well received. We had a number of presenters at the highest of levels down at the SUNY administration for the areas that councils are involved with, as in capital construction. We had John Hagan, we had Wendy Gilman, who's in charge of the Vice Chancellor for Budget Planning Analysis, and we had Dr. Killeen, who is the new president of the University Foundation and Vice Chancellor for Research at SUNY. He was absolutely terrific, and I think one of the highlights of the conference was the panel discussion in the round with four college presidents talking about what, you know, the roles of, and how they interact with their particular councils and the roles. And I think there are some best practices that are coming out of that, and we'll be following up on that. That's in the past. Looking forward, ACT has, for the last 2 years, the only 2 years, that the Chancellor's had her State of the University address, which she will be having on January 15th. ACT will be sponsoring the luncheon afterwards. The invitation goes to all council members. I think it's a command performance for all campus presidents and community college presidents to attend. I think we have about 130, and I think this year we have suggested that the Board of Trustees, under the chairmanship of Carl McCall, join us in the sponsorship of that luncheon, so we think that will happen. So that's coming up on the 15th of January.
It's in Albany?
It's in Albany. It follows, the Chancellor does her address 11 o'clock or so, and then after that we go right to the egg. Yep. So it's a... I'm sure we're going to have our UAlbany Day, and I know that there's a SUNY Day, so there's a number of things that are going on that we'll keep everybody informed of.
Great. Thank you. We have two items here, council's role and election of council's officers, and, they're two separate items, but in some ways they go together. I'm going to start on the second one first, just as a frame of reference. We worked to amend our bylaws earlier this year, calendar year, to provide for certain officers and election of those officers every year by the end of the fiscal year, which is June 30. I think constructively working backwards, we will have two board meetings in the first half of 2013. I think the first meeting will be February 4th. Actually, Sorrel, do you have the dates for the council meetings?
Yes, February 4 and
April
26.
Okay, so I think in looking ahead, what makes sense is for people who'd like to run for an office, you know, to think about socializing that, putting together a slate. I think it would be good to probably think about for the next meeting, you know, people announcing, you know, what positions they'd like to run for. And we can have an election at the meeting in April. There are two seats, is that right? There's vice chair and secretary? Okay. So there's vice chair and secretary. You know, obviously, you know, depending on what the governor chooses to do with respect to appointments, he may or may not have appointed a chair by then. I have had a conversation with the chancellor and the chancellor's office about appointees, you know, a chair, and that's, I think, a constructive conversation. I think it's fair to say, and Pierre has the facts better than I do, but there's a significant amount of vacancies and holdovers on council positions, you know, across the system.
Are we down a position? We're even, right?
No, we have people are continuing to serve, so in that role. So, you know, that's a little bit in flux. I mean, I think, you know, I think it's fair to say that I think she would like to have some discussion with Dr. Jones, get some input from the governor's office, and think about that chair's role. So she's aware of it. Dr. Jones, who I've spoken to about the position in the council, is certainly aware of it. So I don't know what the best practice is for election. You know, I don't know if you have any input there, but it seems to be just logical. You build a slate, and you have an election. So
we may very well be the only council that has that in their particular bylaws. There's only four or five other councils that have bylaws, so I think this is breaking ground.
Okay.
So, just so we're electing a what?
A secretary and a vice chair, and you may or may not have a chair. If you don't have a chair, then the vice chair is the presiding officer.
The vice chair is always appointed by statute.
The chair is always
appointed. The chair is always appointed.
Correct.
Yeah. When George stepped down and became interim president, I was elected by the council to be vice chair, and I've served in that role since. It would be up to the council to vote and elect its officers, and we've created two, right? Mm-hmm. Secretary and vice chair, which continues to exist. So, again, I would ask people to think about which positions they would like to run for, and, you know, probably present that at the next meeting, you know, and then we can have the election in April. And I actually welcome any input on that, but I think from a process standpoint, that's
I was going to nominate Sorrell for secretary right now. It's got to be a member, so somebody's going to have to.
Yeah.
So Dennis,
then it's a different title for this. It becomes liaison officer.
University liaison. University liaison.
And does it make sense since there are people like myself? I guess my term is over. Is that it? And there are other people whose terms are over, so you can't really run for an officer. Terms.
You know, the bylaws don't. I don't think say, but
sure you can. No, I'm not.
You know, you continue to be a member until your successor is appointed, right? So you're either reappointed or your successor is appointed. So you can run for office, and obviously, if you're replaced, then there would be an election to replace you. No, obviously, you haven't gotten as granular to talk about, you know, special elections and things like that. I think, you know, why don't we just say if you're a member and you want to run for that office, you know, run. And you should take into consideration, you know, whether you may or may not be here in the future. And I'm sure people who vote may, you know, take that into consideration as well.
So then you say you had a conversation with the chancellor. Is it your understanding that a chair is about to be named? Or?
No, it's not my understanding of that at all. I think my understanding is just like with other university councils, that the chancellor is aware that there are openings. The governor's appointments office is aware of it. There are other openings, not just at SUNY, but, you know, for example, people have seen some focus on there's not a CEO at LIPA. So, I mean, I think there are a lot of openings in government, and the appointments office is clearly aware of that. You know, one of the things you may have seen is that the appointments process is moving over to OGS, and that's intended to, for lack of a better term, I think, professionalize that process, perhaps. I think, you know, whether there is or isn't some concern about how that process is historically conducted out of the appointments office, that will now be running at least partially through OGS. I don't know that that's exactly been figured out how that's going to work yet. But, no, I'm not aware of any candidate for chair being in the offing. So we haven't had a chair since,
Since George.
Since George was chair and stepped down, so I don't even know.
So why wouldn't it be a good idea to name a chair now that we have an incoming president? I think that would bring clarity.
Yeah, you go tell the voter.
I said the bylaw said we name an acting chair. They didn't say we name a chair.
Well, the presiding officer role is filled by the vice chair, and we have created that position, and the chair is a statutory position that's filled by law by the governor. So, you know, we elect a vice chair and a secretary. You know, we will do that again in the last board meeting before the end of the year. Now, if in the interim the governor appoints a chair, then obviously the chair is the presiding officer. You know, I think it's this body works as much by consensus and committee as it does, you know, the gavel is not exactly what drives this. And I think...
I've never seen you use the gavel.
You've been clutching it a lot.
I was going to say, I think we should practice, like, throwing it back and forth or something.
So, yeah, I mean, the chair, by statute, is appointed by the governor. So.
You know, the last I heard, there were something like 100 open council positions across the state.
Yeah, well, at the ACT meeting.
Well, I went to Chairman McCall at the previous SUNY board meeting, and I said, I may need some help. And he said, well, good luck, because I've got two members of the Board of Trustees that are sitting in the governor's office. I made the same pitch to the chancellor Wednesday at this most recent SUNY, and her response was, good luck. But, you know, I think with the movement maybe toward, you know, OGS, and also with Schwartz, the governor's secretary, coming out and saying that he thinks non-paying board members don't have to fill out all those financial aid forms and go through BCI checks and everything else if you serve, if it's a non-paying position. So we, ACT, on behalf of ACT, we're sending a letter in support of that, and we're also crafting a letter to go to the governor asking for a meeting either with Jim Latch or somebody on his staff to, again, Lonnie Treat, who is the assistant for higher education for the governor, was at our conference, took down a couple of names, so I'm hopeful that we're moving on some of the appointments.
I think it's fair to say that the chancellor thinks that having a new president coming in will galvanize some focus on some of the vacancies at Albany, and she's hopeful that that can, you know, get some things moved. Everyone's welcome, of course, to offer names to the appointments office, whether it's, you know, for yourself or others. You know, and I'm sure the chancellor would welcome taking names too. But she's aware of it, the appointments office is aware of it, and I think it's just a very deliberate process for appointing not just council positions or chairs of councils, but a lot of other positions in government. So that's my understanding of where it is.
I mean, if I may go on record, I know that I have expressed my displeasure over the last few months over some of the procedures of how the particularly the presidential search went. And Dan, you just said something, I want to kind of call you on it, that this council works on consensus, I believe is what you just said. And that is not my understanding of how the process took place, which is why I am kind of a disgruntled member at this point. And I think you're right. I think you make sense about doing this in a logical timeline. February, have folks put their names up. April, have an election. But I just want to make sure that it is going to be fully consensus. And I will tell you directly the two concerns that I had. One was, how is it decided? And please, this is not personal. I have no problems with anybody personally, but I want to know how it was decided that there were going to be co's for the search committee. And I want to know why and how it was determined that there were only going to be five members. That was nothing that was ever discussed in this room.
Well, I can look. The search process is statutory,
correct.
And that was done by statute. The chair serves as the chair of the search committee, so that's pretty easy.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to the chancellor about the fact that, you know, I am a holdover; my successor has not been appointed, and we were both concerned that in the interim it could be possible that there was an appointment made whereby I'd have to step down, and we thought that would be very awkward in a search process to have me step down and leave that vacant. So after discussion with the chancellor, we talked about having co-chairs. You know, we went back and forth on that. really the prerogative, and if you look at the search process, it doesn't talk about the whole council serving on the search process. It serves, talks about having a limited amount of people.
Correct.
We're not going to have 9 people serve on the search committee from the council.
I'm not
so that's one of the areas where, while I'm talking generally about consensus and input and working as a group that's collaborative, clearly there's some prerogatives that reside with the chair and in certain sense with the chancellor, and some of it by statute. So the committee talks, the committee framing for the search process is in statute. There's some other members that are holdovers. Rob's one, yep. John's one. You know, we talked about that with the chancellor and not wanting to have a position, notwithstanding, their understanding of the process, their commitment, et cetera. It wasn't a reflection of that. Not wanting holdovers, on the search process in case there were appointments made and they had to step down. And then I think, frankly, in my conversation with the chancellor, we talked about tenure and participation. Jim, in your instance, you hadn't served on the council for a long time, I think maybe a year at that point, and you hadn't been to all the meetings. So I think with that in mind and looking at who was there and trying to have representation and full representation, 4 is the number. 4 has historically been the number. And it was a conversation with me and the chancellor and thinking about the best interests, and a little bit of that clearly prerogative. And that's how it was arrived at. And I think
and
that's
that is reasonable.
Well, it's not a reasonable statute.
But why were we not talking about that?
The chancellor.
Why wasn't that conversation had with the council? That's
well,
what I'm
I think
saying.
A little bit is incumbent upon you to understand what the statutory roles are.
I know the statutory roles. Dan.
Okay.
What you just broke down, though, was not just statutory. It was also prerogative. It was also conversation. It was
but
also
within the statute is the prerogative of how the search committee is
again,
comprised.
There was a discussion of how many council members should be on the search committee.
That's in the guidelines.
I do remember
that.
Yeah,
it's that, in the guidelines.
Yeah.
That's in the
but
guidelines.
I would moreover probably just echo that heretofore, there's never been a problem. It's always, I've gone through two.
Have there been two chairs?
All I'm saying is it has been harmonious. We're all professionals. We all have other jobs.
Correct.
I'm 50 million miles an hour. That's just me. Mm-hmm. Times the number of people here.
I don't have another job. Sorry.
You got to be a school kid.
That's my point. I'm not trying to pick on anybody. I'm just trying to say it's just all about conversation. It's all about... And then as soon as it was leaked out, my goodness, the conversation was at a fever pitch.
Well, but you
so
know,
we
one
can
thing
do
I was
it.
Gonna, but wait a minute. You know, interestingly, aside from the guidelines and the 4 mm-hmm. people on the committee and all of that stuff, the council's participation in the search was actually somewhat abbreviated because of the leak.
Right.
There had been the normal process. And in hindsight, I think one of the weaknesses of the process is that it's so long, so you can have leaks. But because of the leak, it limited the amount of time that we had intended to have more people on campus involved in the process. We had a thing set up for that, called off. Council had expected to be able. We had expected to have the entire council meet with the people and, go through their own vetting process, cancel. Interestingly...
And again, the process calls for going back to the full council and
right,
having that process.
Right, and unfortunately...
A lot of that got attenuated because of the leak. And Jim, I think I offered to have, on a sidebar, I acknowledged your frustration. I appreciate it. I appreciate what you're saying now. Yeah. I think in the email you said no need. So...
Yeah,
you
rejected
my
fact.
Offer to have it.
It was
it's
after
not after the fact that you don't know the facts.
I do know the facts.
Going on the press.
I did know the facts. I just wanted to know
right.
how the process was. How the determination was made. You've answered it today.
That I did.
That is what I. That was all that I had wanted, and that's why I had a frustration, and why it took until December 7th for that to happen. Why we didn't have this beforehand. So. I am now on the record. Now everyone knows my frustration. It's not a personal animosity to everyone. I love working with everyone. I want to continue to work with everyone.
I just
want to make sure that we do continue to have the consensus, as you said, Dan. I'd like to see continue to happen.
Just for the record, then, respectfully, and being kind of an interloper here, the old adage, there's 3 sides to every story. And yours, mine, and the truth. Thank you for articulating your side. I think Dan gave a different one, and
I certainly am not the arbiter of fact here and not the judge or jury, but I certainly know there was no malfeasance in any instance here. And if there was no oversight, it was merely an oversight. But again, the spirit of actually moving forward and speaking of the council, as Pat had mentioned, being discussed, that everything was coming back to the treehouse and we were all going to have our own decision and have fights and discussions as we have to do as a family, but then walk out as a family decision, have a decision. That was a bridge. So I want to validate your concerns, but I certainly don't want to, I don't believe it's fair to criticize the stuff, especially when we look at the fruit of what we've gotten. And that, to me, is the ultimate goal, and that's the bogey that we're going after. So, fine.
Okay. Well, Jim, you're on record. With respect to council roles, it's clear that you have a lot of people here who are passionate about the university, committed to the university. I think, as George suggested, no one should ever be limited by what's in the statute as far as what we do individually or as a body with this council. There's no doubt that where you have fiduciary obligations and you have approval rights and authority, that's where the power is first and foremost and eminent, and I think that's where this body's first function resides. Building outside of that, as you heard from George, is a function of working with the president to provide, as our body title says, counsel and advice, build trust, understand where the new president is going to want to go, how we can best fit him with his mission, both individually and as a group. My sense from Dr. Jones, and it's early on, he's going to welcome and encourage participation from all stakeholders at the university. I think it's important to have an appreciation for where he's going to. I think it's also important to appreciate that he's going to be new. He's going to be hitting the ground. He certainly has a sense of what the council role is, and I think we can help refine that and define that and flesh that out. I know Pierre and Michael and Abner have been to the ACT meetings and looking at best practices, and I think that's certainly an evolution, and we should always explore with ourselves what we can be doing more. So I think with that as a precursor and knowing that the president is coming in, I think it's important to get a sense of where he's trying to go and support him. I'm certainly open, and I do apologize a little bit, I do have to leave by 4, but I'm certainly open if people want to explore further, at this meeting, the role of the council going forward as it relates to working with the next president. But I think we should all be very cognizant, of, again, where we have powers and where we provide advice and build trust, and we have a new president coming in that we're going to want to work with. So,
I just wanted to keep the issue on the front burner. I know we had talked about having a retreat, and I think probably if we have one in the spring with Dr. Jones to see what his vision is and what he would like the council to be engaged in, and that would be positive, and we can work with him in a constructive way. So I don't think we need to have further discussion on this issue at this time.
Well, I think that would be wonderful, and I think it's a great idea, because I think if we can demonstrate to Dr. Jones that we're here to help and be collaborative, I think a retreat would be a great place for him to get to know the members of the council, share with us what he would like to do, and I think we can think about how to help. And I will say that, and it's not a reflection on anyone else, but if you look at Pierre, Dr. Jackson, and all the rest of you, there's a lot of opportunities to get very involved, in this institution. And I think the more each of us can do that, the more we build core trust, we're integrated into the place and the community and have an opportunity to really help Dr. Jones. I think we all want him to be a fabulous success. I think the process yielded a wonderful result in Dr. Jones as the president. We're very fortunate to have him, and I certainly look forward to working with him. So. Okay. Any other business people?
Yes. Perhaps along the same lines as Dr. Jones did to organize and ask for an organization of a presidential transition team, which Kay serves on, and I was happy to serve on, and we have our co-chair here, and perhaps Susan could kind of bring us up to date on that and some of the background, which I think will help us, to inject ourselves with the new president's
Thank you. Absolutely. So the President's Transition Advisory Committee was formed in September, started with the charge from Dr. Jones about how best might he learn about the community, about the university, what issues did he need to learn about, really looking to advice to how to go about this large learning task. So we took up that charge and have been working to develop for him what I call UAlbany 101, a very extensive syllabus with items on it about meeting and learning about issues in academics, in student activities, and athletics, in community and alumni affairs, in gov relations, research, and some campus-wide issues. Vince Delio and Chris Bouchard back there also serve on it, as does Fardeen. It's a group of about 26 individuals who from across the campus, faculty, staff, and students. And we've tried to capture as much of the campus as we could in a snapshot. Of course, there are 49 things he needs to do in the first 15 days. He asked us for some guidance about how he might space this out a bit. I think his strategy is going to be to take as long as he needs to listen and learn, both campus and off campus, as well as the government relations and SUNY relations. So, all in all, a very comprehensive view. We're going to be putting an announcement out to the community to just give people an update about the advisory committee's work, to let them know that there'll be a starting day event. That's the next thing that we put together. I'm sorry, and Kay is on this group also. I'm looking at you. She's one of the co-chairs for our community and alumni group. So half the room is in. He asked us to consider the question of should there be some kind of starting event. And this issue came up because, of course, without knowing the campus customs, he said, I will be there on January 2nd. So we said, yay, bring your blanket. Because, of course, we go into the energy conservation time zone then. Many people are off campus for a period of time. And so we were thinking about what is, it's not a good time to arrive. We figured we'd create a different arrival opportunity for him, and that will be the first day of classes when we have designed a new year, new semester, new president tour of the main campus. He'll stop into the lecture centers to say hello to a group of students. He'll go over to the campus center, probably in high traffic time, to meet whoever is walking through there. He'll go to the downtown campus. He'll go to Nano. He'll go to the East Campus. He'll probably end at the end of the day with an alumni event at the downtown campus. Saying hello, he'll be traveling from one site to the next with a different group of people each time to have a chance of everybody participating in this introduction of the new president to the campus. He'll probably say a few words along the way, but not vision setting or anything. He's really just wanting to make his presence known. And we're hoping to draw in some of the purple and gold student ambassadors as docents for this tour. So look for that on the first day of classes, and so it'll be a buzzing day on campus anyway.
What day is that?
The 23rd of January. And we'll make sure that you know the tour.
Yeah.
We're going to have some kind of. Those of you who have children know about the NORAD Santa tracker. This is for those children who need to keep track of exactly where Santa is on December 24th. The Northeast Radar has a Santa tracker about where Santa goes each time. So we're going to have some kind of way to keep the community informed, possibly through Facebook, Twitter. President's going to be here next.
Where in the world is Robert Jones? where in Albany is Robert Jones?
GPS.
track.
Find my
iPhone. Well, he actually wanted to. Part of the concern, of course, is because everybody wants to meet him, and everybody would like to meet him first. And so some of it is to make it clear that. He's getting there. It's happening, but it will take a bit of time. He does have to do some routine things at the same time that he's doing his learning tour. So that's cooking as well.
Can you do like a WebEx?
Let's do a WebEx?
Some sort of like thing where you speak to everybody like online and everyone...
Actually, the communications marketing was just talking about that today, to do an introductory, in-studio video of him, in-studio video interview, where so you could click on it and simply sort of see him and hear him talk about being here, even if you didn't get the live feed.
Sounds a little Big Brother, though, don't you think? Yeah. You know, it's like he's speaking
the way,
to him.
The way our tracking system isn't. Might as well go all the way.
It's 9 o'clock.
I don't know what the
like in Sleeper when the guy would come on and talk to everybody.
Let the professionals figure it out.
Yeah, some way to keep people posted that there's learning going on and people being met and different perspectives gained. So we'll see. We'll see what it actually turns out to. But that first day, new year, new semester, new president tour. We're also beginning conversations about what the campus might need in terms of an inauguration event, and I'm hearing a fair amount of enthusiasm for that, so it's likely that we will do that. Somebody pointed out on the advisory committee that we hadn't had one of those since 1995.
Wow.
Which was when President Hitchcock was installed, and so that was people are feeling the need for some ceremony, some positive, forward-looking events. What that will look like, very concerned to keep it affordable. Both Dr. Jones and the committee are both saying nothing that looks too expensive. Tie it to an existing event in some way if we can, do things that showcase. But build a sense of unity, a sense of community, and also showcase our strengths. So we'll see what that plays out to be. We're hoping that it would be in April, later May, April perhaps. Date is absolutely not in the cards yet. But the students actually were making the case today that it's really the students who have been here, who know that he's coming, that need to be part of this, not the freshmen who arrive in the fall.
They won't know the difference.
Right. So that really made a case for trying to do it this spring. So manageable is one of the goals also that we're working on. So far, what you'll see as January 2nd comes and the days go on is him making his way around the community and the campus, meeting with different groups, learning about different issues on campus and off. You'll see this sort of starting day on the 23rd, even though in reality he will have been here before, but to really launch it off. And then that learning time will continue. Just judging from the kind of number of things that we were recommending, I'd say his syllabus takes him takes him well into April. Right. And then the preparations for this inauguration event will go on from there. So I think it's going to be a pretty brisk learning time. It's a lot to learn. Big state, big campus, different state, different campus. And that's where it's going so far. So it's great progress, and people are very excited about what he is bringing and the opportunity for a fresh start and a way forward and to bring some important unity to the campus. So,
great. Thank you.
Yeah. Question. In the course of that planning, has there been an arrangement to enable student government leaders to be with him during those initial couple of days?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, he's been, as George mentioned, he's been on campus for a day and a half, 2 days, every 2-3 weeks since his appointment. And one of the first things he did is take the Student Association dinner with them. That's the Undergraduate Student Association. Met with a group of students and had dinner in the State Quad. And so has made his way, had the Senate Executive Committee had dinner with them. again, just a beginning tour, and then they'll have much more of an opportunity to learn more in depth about the issues.
Okay.
So,
thank you,
Susan.
Yeah. Dan, the only last thing that I can, Dan?
Yeah.
Just the last thing before we go. We got a very brief comment from Vince on what's happening on February 4th, and then we can adjourn.
It's UAlbany Day, February 4th, and I think some of you have participated in it before. It's really two prongs to the day. There's the day in which we have our advocacy visits. The big issue that George alluded to in his president's report is the capital plan. That'll be, it comes around once every 5 years. It's a big deal for the university. It's a big deal for SUNY. So for those of you, we're going to have the council meeting probably around 3 o'clock in the work with Sorrell on finalizing those details. But the for those of you who can make the whole day and be a part of the president's teams in advocating for the university that day, it's very important. It's a multi-billion dollar plan. There's some question about how robust that capital plan will be this year. And your participation as leaders on this council really would mean a lot. So I encourage you, if possible, and we'll be communicating with you accordingly, but to try to be a part of the full day.
And we're having a meeting that, are we having an actual meeting that day?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. But you would brief us in advance.
Absolutely.
Actually,
yeah.
I mean, because
yeah.
I would,
yeah.
I know.
Yeah, I have
it. I would need to be educated.
Sure. We actually have not received from, while the trustees adopted the capital plan in its totality, they have not shared what projects they're identified for each campus, so that remains to be seen. But we will.
We're just going to need some talking points if we're going to.
Yeah, but you guys are really good. I've participated before. These guys, they gave you good stuff. I mean, you go in.
Good.
Thanks, Vince. So you'll be. Yeah, we'll be getting more to everybody else. Okay.
Motion to adjourn. Okay.
On favor?
Yeah,
second?
Right. All right. Yeah, I mean, I'm not.
Have a good holiday.
Thank you, everybody.
Yes. Yeah. 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 Yeah.